From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Wednesday, July 17th, 2024. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gunavchish, Hawa, Toyosiknusam, Salama. Thank you for joining the conversation. On today's show, a preview of the upcoming Culturally Responsive Education Conference from Sea Alaska Heritage Institute happening August 7th through the 9th. Summer updates from the Juno Douglas City Museum, and we'll chat with the organizers and director of a special one-night-only reading of The Book of Will happening tonight at Perseverance Theater at 7 p.m. in partnership with Juno Ghostlight Theater. Those conversations, plus Tongass Voices, Curious Juno, and more coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon.
Support from Hanson Gress. Seeking curious people who like technology, network engineering, and customer support. Opportunities for those who thrive on problem solving. Details at hansongress.com/careers.
And before we begin today, do you have questions about KTOO's news coverage or ideas for stories? A new feature, stop by our office hours at the Mendenhall Valley Public Library this Thursday, 7/18, from 6 to 8 p.m. That's this Thursday, that's tomorrow. Meet local news reporters Anna Canny and Yvonne Crumry and share your perspective as a listener. That's tomorrow night, starting at 6 p.m. at the Valley Library.
You are listening to KTOO's Tlingit Word of the Week. This week's word comes from Kehinak John Martin. And the word this week is ch'uk.
Ch'uk.
That means coho or silver salmon. And here's a sentence.
Yachdatachea ch'ukotziti.
It was from Yekutat that the coho were born. Let's hear it again.
Ch'uk.
Coho or silver salmon. Ganesh Chish to Chune Lance Twitchell, Goldbelt Heritage Foundation, and the University of Alaska Southeast for this audio.
Kehinuk John Martin was Akdain Tan and a child of a Kaguantan man. He is from the Hunakawu, the people of Huna, and was a contributing elder and speaker at many language immersion gatherings in Glacier Bay, Yakutat, and Juneau. He attended boarding school in Shkakwe, Skagway, and attended Gonzaga University.
Tune in next week for another Tlingit Word of the Week from KTOO.
You're listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. This coming August, the 7th through the 9th, Sea Alaska Heritage Institute is presenting an annual conference that brings together educators from all around the world. Its focus is on bringing culturally responsive education into classrooms and curriculum. It's for educators, administrators, faculty, and community members. This year's theme is connecting culture, community, and curriculum. A lot of C's. I like that. It's the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute's 7th Annual Culturally Responsive Education Conference. You can find out more at conference.seaalaskaheritage.org. But here to share more in the studio are Christy Ford and Jamie Shanley from Sea Alaska Heritage. Gunavchish, haye adi. Thank you so much for being here today. It's a pleasure to have you in the studio. Wasiati, how's it going?
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, great. It's so good to have you here and to talk about this thing. I love that we're able to talk about it a few weeks in advance in case there's still people out there who might want to register for this and find all out about it. And this is the 7th annual. So I'm curious about how this, before we get into the details of what it is, how did this conference come about? What was the idea and what was that origin seed? They're like, who's going to take it?
We were giving each other the eye. Well, we're so grateful to be here today to share with the listeners about this opportunity. We've been running a program through Sea Alaska Heritage called Through the Cultural Lens. And Through the Cultural Lens has been an opportunity opened up to educators across many districts in Southeast to learn different culturally responsive education, as well as a cultural orientation to Southeast Alaska values, language, indigenous ways of knowing. And so it's been more of a cultural orientation. So if you're a new teacher, or if you've been a teacher living in Southeast Alaska for years, this is an opportunity for you to understand the different protocols, the different structures, the values, the moieties, the clans, the houses, different ways of being that is really important for understanding and working with our students and working with our families. So the conference has just been a big culminating opportunity that has come out of that program. And so that's where we are, the 7th annual Culturally Responsive Education Conference.
I love that. That is so good. And it is open to everyone, basically, but it's primarily geared towards educators or administrators of education. Is that right?
Yeah, I would say it's open to anybody who's interested. Primarily, the topics are focused for K through college level teachers and educators, but anybody who's interested in learning more about culturally responsive or place-based education would have a seat in the audience. We have people signed up who are cultural specialists, elders, university students, and really our audience has grown over the 7 years to include partnerships internationally. So we have people coming from all over to come to our conference this year.
Yeah, it seems like it would be something that it's educational. So it seems like that could be for anyone really like that. And if, even if you're, because it is say it's open to community members. And I do want to mention this, it's free.
Yes.
Which is fantastic. What an amazing thing that Sea Alaska can provide this for no cost. Because as we know, a lot of times conferences and there's registration fees and, but you're like bringing people in and flying people in and doing all these wonderful things. And like, it's free, which is fantastic. But it is open to community members. And in my mind, I think, oh, like if I owned a small business, or if I was, you know, a volunteer at a school, or if I was, you know, a coach on a sports team, or any one of those kinds of things where I might be able to incorporate some of this, because like you're saying, you're learning about the moieties, you're learning about the land, you're learning about what that way of life is and how it can be incorporated into whatever curriculum. And curriculum is a wide word, right? It could be used for all kinds of things. So that's really cool. So I wanted to talk about a couple of the special speakers that you have. Can we mention a couple of those who are coming to visit us?
Yeah. So I want to go back to the part about it being free.
Oh, yes.
And just want to give a big Gunashchish and Hawa to our partners in this conference.
Absolutely.
Gold Belt Heritage Foundation, the Smithsonian Institution, and the Association of Alaska School Boards have been instrumental in partnering and allowing us to get some really dynamic speakers and presenters, also providing travel and supply funds so that we can prepare our presenters with everything they need to really.
Yeah, because I guess the point is that it is free to the public, but it costs a lot to make
Correct.
This thing happen.
It costs a bit to make it happen. And so it's through those really incredible partnerships that we can offer it for free.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also to our smaller sponsors, University of Alaska Southeast, Heritage Coffee, and Discovery Southeast for giving us every little bit helps in the events.
So. That's awesome, Jamie. Thank you for that. Gunashchish. So these speakers that we're able to bring here, like, let's talk a bit about that a little bit.
Yeah. So we're really excited this year. We have one keynote and then four what we're calling featured speakers. And then we have over 96 last count I had, 96 presenters.
Oh my goodness.
To give us 59 breakout sessions, 9 field experiences, getting people out on the land all over Juneau. So we're really excited about all of our presenters. Our keynote is an Indigenous education advocate, and her name is Jo Crona. She's an author, a speaker, a consultant, and her book, Wahi Wa, Indigenous Pedagogies, An Act for Reconciliation and Anti-Racist Education, is dynamite for any educator out there or anybody who's interested in learning about Indigenous ways of being. And how that interacts with Western society. It's a wonderful book, and I'm really looking forward to her keynote. We also have 4 featured speakers, all of which we've worked with in the past, and we're so excited to see them on this platform. One is named Jessica Denny, and she's coming to us from the Atna-Dene lands and is going to share some of her Indigenous education and language revitalization research. Raul Aguilar Jr. Is coming to us from New Mexico, and he's the current executive director of the Indigenous Languages Institute in New Mexico. Nakaklan Hans Chester is a local educator. He's currently with the Tlingit Culture, Language, and Literacy Program in Juneau School District, and will be giving a featured presentation about his research on Tlingit literacy and the program he's developing. And then Dr. Stephen Langdon, a professor of anthropology at UAA, and who has worked and written many books with the Alaska Heritage Institute, is also coming to give a really exciting keynote about, well, I don't want to go into too much. I don't want to give it all away, but it's looking at traditional ecological knowledge and STEAM. So
wow, that right there is enough, right? That's already it's already going to be a great deal. And each of those speakers will happen over the course of the few days, right? That's what it is. We're talking about the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute's Culturally Responsive Education Conference happening August 7th through the 9th. And of course, you can find out more information at conference.sealaskaheritage.org. And we just started because that was the keynote speakers and the featured speakers, as Jamie said. But then I also, you said there's 50 some odd breakout sessions. I looked at the schedule online in previous years, and if you go onto the website, you can actually see the history of the conference there. You can go back and find in a tab all the different conferences or the breakout sessions that have presented in the past. And that will give you sort of an idea of what's to come. I don't think that the breakout schedule is completely done in final draft and on the website yet, but you can get a sense of the conference schedule because it is on there. And it kind of gives you the opportunity to see where you and that might fit in the day. And I love this also that there's shuttle buses, because you can, if you live downtown or if you're downtown, the bus will pick you up at the Baranoff and take you to the conference, which is kind of cool. Can you give us a highlight of some of the breakout sessions that you know of now that might we could give a little tease to folks?
Sure. There's so many. I'm really excited about many of them. Some of our presenters have been presenting at our conferences for the whole time we've been doing them, and some people are new. I'm pretty excited about our partnership with some schools down in New Mexico, the Naca School, and some of the Indigenous language and Indigenous literacy curriculum that they're bringing to not only our pre-conference, but also a couple breakouts and workshops. We also are partnering with a group called Focus 5, which is down in Denver. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of an arts and literacy integration. And it incorporates so beautifully with cultural and place-based education. So there's going to be some an art literacy thread that incorporates music and movement. And actually, they're going to also do a conference or a concert for us on one of the nights of the conference.
Amazing.
And Imani Gonzalez and Ed Littlefield will be partnering to do a native jazz trio.
Oh, my gosh.
Happening on August 7th.
People familiar with Juno Afternoon know Ed Littlefield. He's been on the program many times. That's wonderful. And I did.
I was just going to say some of my favorite things about our conference and the breakout sessions, which is different than other conferences. And it's those cultural immersions.
Yeah.
And so it's just not a sit in your seat or get lectured at kind of conference. We actually fundamentally believe that we need to make sure that our participants are out on the land, learning and having cultural immersion experiences as well. And so August 7th, individuals can sign up for which cultural immersion they would like to participate in. And so that to me is like a huge highlight of this conference.
That is so cool because you're not in a room just watching slides of the land. You're actually on the land doing the things and learning and you know, tactile and doing all that's really great. I also noticed on here that there's going to be an artist market. Is that true?
Yeah. And this is the first time we're kind of incorporating this into our conference. We're going to have about 8 to 10 artists there. Some of them will be actually demoing some of their art. While they also have products for sale. And we're excited to incorporate
that. Sounds fantastic. Okay. Now, if this doesn't sound like enough for you, August 7th through the 9th, there are actually some things you can do a couple days before that that are part of this conference. We call them pre-conference, Christy.
That's right.
And so we got two of them. Let's talk about each one. What do we have for these pre-conferences?
Well, as Jamie had mentioned, we have these dynamite people coming to Juno. And so we said, let's really take advantage and schedule some pre-conference institutes for those individuals coming up. So we have one pre-conference that focuses on art and literacy integration with the Kennedy Center individuals and the Focus Five. And then we also have Native Literature that's part of our Raven Writes program, in which we're partnering with the Native American Charter School Inspired Schools Network. That's our NACA network of individuals, where they're really going to help individuals understand this concept called Indigenous Genius by Design and how to incorporate Native literature into their mentor text and how to teach reading through really a culturally responsive, focused manner in which you're designing your curriculum around. And so both of these pre-conference institutes are on August 5th and 6th. The Arts and Literacy one is at Thunder Mountain High School. It's free. And then the Native Literature pre-conference is same dates, and that's out at UAS. You can find out information on both of those at our website, which you've said the website address several times. But what I would say is that there's still space available, but it's super limited. So if any individual is really wanting to come and dig deep into either arts and literacy integration or Native literature, they should sign up quickly. For those two opportunities.
I see. Okay. And it's different people that
I forgot to say, there is some funding to support travel stipends. So if there are listeners from out of town that would like to join us, we do have some funding available to support some travel stipends.
Or if you know someone, if you're listening and you know someone who would be, this could be beneficial for, you can let them know. And if you go to conference.sealaskaheritage.org, you can find out more because there's specific people for each one of these that you're going to want to email. Linda Frame for the Arts and Literacy Integration, and it looks like Danielle Haas for the Raven Writes Native Literature Program. And that's a tough one because they're both at the same time on the same days. And it's like, how do you choose? I guess it depends on maybe what your curriculum is. But you can learn a little bit about each one of these and see like which one might fit into your teaching that you're doing. And I think that's just so fun. I mean, wow, what an amazing, amazing thing. Like, this is just, there's so much.
There is so much. One thing that it also made me think of when you said listeners not in Juneau, our conference is also offered hybrid. So anybody who wants to register as a virtual participant, registration is free for everybody, and you can find that registration link on our website. We'll have about 4 breakout sessions per session, so 12 a day, of options where you can either people will be a virtual presenter or there will be a hybrid classroom experience.
Of course, if you can make it, because then you get that experience on the land for the full day, all those kinds of things. But if you can't, you can at least experience some of that information via Zoom. Now, you mentioned registration, and I think this is important, right? Because I'm sure that there are certain aspects or certain areas of this, like you said, with the pre-conference stuff, there's a limited amount of participants. So you need to register in advance. And luckily you have a few weeks here because it's only July 17th and or whenever you might be hearing this on the podcast. But this conference is happening August 7th through the 9th. The pre-conference is happening August 5th and 6th. So it's really a great few days for folks to get involved. And I'm curious, are teachers able to get extended credit? That situation that teachers do?
Yes. So when you go to register, you'll see a field experience sign up. And on that same form is where teachers can indicate if they would like a continuing education credit. By participating in the course and paying $75, you can earn up to 1 university credit for participating.
I see. Okay. Yeah. Because sometimes people need that for their continuing ed and all of that. Well, this is fantastic. What a great conference. It's the 7th annual conference. Christy?
Well, I was just going to add one more thing.
Yeah, please.
Our registration numbers are really high right now. And I would highly encourage individuals, if you want to register, you should register. We are closing registration July 31st. We want to make sure we're thoroughly prepared. We have name tags. We're ready for individuals to come and to participate. So we need to close registration so that we can get ourselves together.
That makes absolute sense. I think that's great because it sounds like it's a huge, I mean, what you all are working really hard to make this thing happen. So it's understandable, of course, to have a few days to get prepared and make sure that you're ready for all of these folks who might come in. So if you know of someone, or if you're interested, again, this is sort of targeted at educators and administrators of education or faculty at universities, but it is also open to community members. And if you find a way to think about how you might incorporate some of this teaching into your business, or if you're a coach, or if you're anything like that you could find a way to, you know, use culturally responsive education in what you do. This seems like an awesome, awesome adventure. And I think it would just be eye opening and really sort of warm the heart, right, in terms of what you're going to be learning. So I really thank you for coming in today, Christy and Jamie. Thank you so much. Ganesh, and best of luck on this awesome conference.
Thank you.
Ganesh Chish Hawa Doiksan Nusam.
Thank you so much. Okay, that was really good. And if you want more, of course, the website is conference.cealaska.org. Up next, we'll talk walking tours and calls for solo artists with the Juneau Douglas City Museum. This is Juneau Afternoon on KTOO. But first, this week's Tongass Voices, perspective from the homelands of the Occoquan and beyond. Every year on July 4th, drums awaken the streets of downtown Juneau. This iconic sound is Juneau Ati Atihan, a musical marching group. One of the lead drummers, Hans Javier, has participated in Juneau's Independence Day parade since he was a kid. 20 years later, Ati Atihan is his way of giving a shout out to his culture while spending time with his family.
First name Hans, last name Javier. What we are doing today is we are drumming for the parade, representing specifically my Filipino culture from Aklan. Aklanon, we are drumming for Ati Atihan. Ati Atihan is a festival. It's generally like a week long. It honors the infant Jesus. It's our saint. It's Santo Niño. So primarily the festival is celebrated for religious purposes. And, you know, we do this, you know, back at home in the Philippines on an annual basis. So, you know, doing it on Independence Day is a great way to represent our culture. watched, you know, my uncles and older cousins do this, and I always wanted to enter, not knowing that, you know, they were open to me learning. And then one day, I believe it was Uncle Ed asked me if I wanted to join. And I think I was maybe 11 or 12 at the time. And ever since, I've been doing it. I am one of many leads. I've played all drums from bass to snare. I was primarily a snare lead. We bought a new quad, so I switched over to the quad. So most importantly, my role as a quad is to make sure people stay in tempo. But my primary role overall is to make sure everything's organized, drummers are present, organized formation, and yeah. Ready? Stop banging! I feel like we bring flavor, and not to kind of downplay the rest of the parade, but, you know, I feel like every time we pass through a certain area, you know, everybody gets up from the curb. Instead of waiting for candies, they'll get up and dance with us. We welcome people to jump in where they're at and come dance with us. Funny story, last year we had, I guess my drummers were banging so hard, we broke like 4 drums last year. So when we pass a certain area, specifically like Marine Park and the Filipino community, people tend to play louder and faster. And that's where people generally break their drums. I'm very close with my family. I'm very close with my cousins. And as we get older, it's a lot harder to see them. But everybody, you know, around this time of year really makes time out to participate. And a lot of these cousins I don't see until, and keep in mind, we live in Juneau, small town, right? But a lot of these cousins I don't see until like a month out of July 4th. So it's a great time for us to kind of reconnect and you know, be a family. I really love that part about it.
This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Time now for our midsummer check-in with the Juno Douglas City Museum. And joining me, as always, Kate Ross, Kenneth Chi, Shad Yigudi. Thank you so much for being here. It's a pleasure to have you, as always, in the studio. Wasiti, how's it going?
Good, good. Busy, you know, fighting through this rain. It's good. It's good. Lots of things going on.
This weather is amazing. But I felt like we haven't had much weather this summer. Maybe that's just my perspective. But it feels like this last week of rain has been catching us up on all of the weather.
I think, you know, it's probably good for some of the plants. Maybe I'll keep on the bright side. Not so good for others. My garden is thriving. I will say that much.
The garden is thriving. I love that. Okay, so we're talking museum, we're talking city museum, and we've got some cool things to talk about. Let's talk about the stuff that's happening in July and August in terms of special walking tours. Tell us a little bit about what we have.
Yeah, so as we are kind of midway through the summer here, we are approaching our final walking tours for a couple of these. So as always, we have our historic downtown walking tours, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays at 1:45. Those are still open, going on for the rest of the season, and we have those free capital tours. But for the specialty tours, the next one is July 27th. That will be the Treadwell walking tour over in Douglas, led by Rich Mattson. So that's always a popular one. So that's our first next one. Then let's see, we have the downtown geology tour August 10th, and that will be the last one for the season. So if you've been thinking about getting out there with Dr. Kathy Connor, who's incredibly knowledgeable, that would be the one to do. And we do have spots on all these walking tours still.
Now, what does I would understand what the Treadwell Mine Tour is. I mean, obviously you're going around Treadwell. What does the downtown geology tour cover?
It covers the geology of downtown Boston. No, there's some interesting geology around how the downtown has been built up, and the original geology of the surrounding mountains and, of course, the mines that are back in those mountains.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, I have not been able to take a tour with her yet. Maybe I'll sign up for that one now.
August 10th.
But yeah, Dr. Kathy Connor is incredible. She wrote the book Roadside Geology of Alaska. And yeah, I've heard wonderful things about the tour. I look forward to taking it. If not this year, then maybe hopefully next.
And all of these are made by reservation.
Correct.
They do cost a little bit of money.
They do.
Not too much. A nominal fee of looks like $31.50.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going to give that phone number out. If you want to call, it's 907-586-3572. That's 586-3572. Now, Kate, is that the only way to make a reservation?
It's not. I'm so glad you asked. You can also send an email. You can email museum.info@juno.gov.
Museum.info@juno.gov. Because museum.info could be a website. But it isn't. It's the email.
It's the email for all things. Yeah.
Museum.info@juno.gov or 586-3572. Okay.
Yep.
So that's the geology tour, which is the last one on August 10th.
That's the last one for that this year. And then we have the final Evergreen Cemetery tour of the season, August 17th. And that is really cool. That's led by Jim Baldwin. And that walks from the museum over to the cemetery and talks about a lot of the really fascinating people who are buried there. So it's a kind of different lens to look at some of our history here locally.
I was just walking through that cemetery the other day,
mm-hmm.
and it's amazing. Like just in terms of how the ground is and how like it's like you see there's tons of old stones that aren't even really readable anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was established in what? It was 1891. And so it's been there a long time.
It's a beautiful spot to kind of take a stroll. And when you do one of our guided tours, you're just going to get that little bit of additional, kind of some education on what's there and a different perspective to see who's buried there.
There's 8,000 people buried there.
That's a new number for me. I knew it was a few thousand, but that's a lot.
It says the final resting place for over 8,000 Juneau residents.
I believe it. Well, if it's been around for, 130 years?
That's wild. Okay. So, now we have to say these happen every summer and
they're
usually like once a month, but mm-hmm. we're in the midsummer area. We're rounding the turn here.
Yep.
So when is that one again?
August 17th, the final Evergreen Cemetery tour.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Got it. Okay, that sounds good.
Yeah.
Is that it? Is that all the rest of the tours?
We have one last Treadwell walking tour. So you've got two more chances for that, right? There's the one coming up quickly, July 27th. The final Treadwell walking tour will be August 24th.
Okay. So if you've got some time in August, you can hit all three of these.
You could.
And then you can also hit the historic downtown Juneau tours, which happen a few times a week, right? Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursdays. And then also the Alaska State Capitol Tour, which that one is free, which is kind of cool.
It is. It's free. And they've been doing a lot of work over there. Tim Powers and Amanda Kraft and a whole bunch of other people have been doing incredible work. They put together a brand new pamphlet to accompany one of our tours, which are free, or to do a self-guided little tour. They've got some audio tour aspects to that as well. Then there's a lot of new art up in the Capitol in the last 4 or 5 years. So even if you think you know the Capitol, it might be worth going and checking it out.
That's pretty cool. That's awesome. Yeah, I don't think I've ever done the Capitol tour, so I think I got to get on that. Okay, so now other big things happening at the museum is solo artist call. You're putting the call out for the solo artist, not for this season. We're thinking 2025.
We're thinking ahead. Yep. 2025-26.
Wow.
That's
amazing that we're getting to 25 and 26.
I know. I can't think about it too hard or my mind starts to melt.
Like, wait,
but
I don't understand the dates, huh? I don't get it. Okay. But
yeah.
Tell us what that is. What does that mean for the solo artist?
Yeah. So the deadline for these submissions is August 31st. So you got about 6 weeks here to get your act together. And so that is for the 25-26 season, and it's November through February. So there's basically 4 months. So this is a call for any artists of any discipline, primarily visual art, but any type of visual art. We have had people submit with tattoo art, textile, of course, all the classic photography, painting, illustration, things like that. But we also accept ceramic art. We had Bonnie Lynn Parker this past year. We accept any kind of sculptural, 3D, multimedia. We would love if anybody has cool ideas for installation pieces. So it's really, really open to a broad variety of different types of art. And it can be for a single artist or a group. We do ask if you're a group of artists, as long as there's a cohesive theme of some sort. So you can put together a group even.
And how many are you looking for? One group for each month? Is that?
Yeah, basically a single artist or a single show.
A single show. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. November through February for 25-26. And that application, the full application is on our website. But yeah, this is a great opportunity for new and kind of developing and upcoming artists, especially because it's an opportunity to curate and mount your own professional exhibit with the support of the museum and our curator. So it is an exhibit that you put on all by yourself, but with support.
With help. And you don't charge them anything to exhibit the artwork.
Correct. Yeah. You have to pay for your own materials to mount the exhibit, but this is not, you don't have to pay, you know, to pay to get in or pay to play or anything like that.
You don't take a commission or anything.
If you choose to sell art, the museum takes a consignment fee from that.
Okay.
Handling the administration aspect.
Gotcha.
But yeah, but just for exhibiting. Yeah.
No. Yeah. Okay. Gotcha. All right. And then finally, just a couple little fun things here. You have some items for fun for sale in the museum store.
We have all sorts of fun stuff. I feel like every few months I get a new little, you know, I see someone in the community and I'm like, hey, why don't you come sell some art over here in our little museum store. Recently, we got some fun items from Christine Kleinheinz of Tidewatcher Arts. So we've got some fun stuff from her. And this is an exclusive Boston.
Okay, exclusive for Juno Afternoon.
Exclusive for
it.
Juno Afternoon.
Yeah.
The Juno Douglas City Museum is going to have a few pieces from renowned artist Bo Anderson.
What?
I know. He sells his things in the Jack Gallery, but he's making a couple things specially for us.
Okay.
So these are usually one-of-a-kind pieces.
When are they dropping?
Very soon. So you'll have to keep an eye out
on
our social media.
On the socials. Go to the socials and watch out for that drop,
yep.
As they say, right? That's the drop.
The
is
drop,
happening.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, it's the city, it's the Juno Douglas City Museum. You can find out more at juno.org/museum. There's still some walking tours happening. There's the Call for Solo Artists, which is due August 31st. And of course, let's shout out the shows that are continuing to play throughout the summer right now.
Yeah, absolutely. We have the Switch and Exchange, the exhibit, kind of mini exhibit all about the history of telephones in Juneau. And that will be going at least through the fall and into the winter. That doesn't have an official end date. And then, of course, until October 19th, we still have our summer exhibit. Yesh kewu at ki ka sha de nach I yan sak. GS, the Raven's Tale Regalia for Future Leaders. That's the Yesh Kewu Raven's Tale Weaving by Lily Hope and her students.
Awesome. That's so good. Kate, thanks so much for coming in. It's the Juno Douglas City Museum, juno.org/museum. Up next, we'll preview a special one-night-only reading of a play called The Book of Will, happening tonight at 7 p.m. It's a collab between Juno Ghostlight Theater and Perseverance Theater. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. But first, this week's Curious Juno.
Alaskans celebrate the 4th of July in a myriad of ways, whether it's log rolling in Petersburg.
On your mark, get set, roll!
Or imitating goose calls in Kotzebue.
All right, wonderful.
In Juneau, we have our fireworks on the 3rd, an old tradition that let miners sleep off their hangovers. But KTOO listener Mary McEwen wrote in to ask about a different July 4th tradition, one that her father told stories about.
It's kind of been a piece of family lore that, you know, I once won a race down Gold Creek on a piece of styrofoam.
It's true. Some brave Junoites used to celebrate Independence Day by racing down Gold Creek on improvised rafts. For this Curious Juno, we talked to some of the people who did it.
there's probably 15 or 20 idiots that attempted it.
That's Jim Williams. He says that when he did the race in the 1960s, dozens of people came to watch the racers from the banks of the creek in downtown Juneau. Gold Creek runs through Juneau in a paved channel. The water flows fast over the concrete. The race started in Cote Park and wound through downtown, so the racers sped past the federal building and Foodland before getting dumped into Gatineau Channel. People went down the creek one at a time, riding everything from proper inflatable rafts to wooden doors. Williams rode an air mattress. It didn't go well.
I just remember going over something and it immediately popped my raft. So I was dead last in the race because I had to walk all the way down Gold Creek because the only way you could get out of there was to get down by Foodland.
He competed with his friend Gary Rosenberger, a high school sophomore at the time. Rosenberger said he laid on his air mattress like a surfboard and paddled with his arms.
I had to hold on to it going over the falls, a little bit of falls, and then it was just smooth sailing from there down.
Old newspaper stories say the fastest time in 1967 was a bit over 2 minutes. The next year, the currents must have been stronger. The winner came in at a minute and a half. Gary Rosenberger said he may have won the race if he hadn't gotten out of the water too soon.
But I didn't know there was an end, where the end was. Yeah. So everybody was yelling at me, but I didn't know what they were yelling because there was had to be six or seven people all yelling the same thing.
And Mary McEwen's dad? Joey McEwen says he won the race on a raft built from styrofoam with a wooden frame.
I think I made a paddle out of a broom handle and a piece of wood, and it was strictly homemade.
But then he left his styrofoam raft outside all year, and by the next July, it was heavy and waterlogged.
The second year I did it, I came in last place.
It's not clear just how enduring this tradition was. The race did not get a lot of news coverage. Williams said it seemed like it only happened once or twice more.
And they really only did it, I would say, maybe 2 or 3 years. And then I think they decided that there's some liability there, and which I don't know why they would have ever thought that.
But another listener wrote in to say he remembered the race continuing well into the 1980s. And a 1967 story in the Alaska Daily Empire calls that year's running the 75th annual sluice race down Gold Creek, though Curious Juno could not find anything to back that up. Rosenberger said it would be more dangerous now. Since the 1960s, some large rocks have been placed at the end of the creek.
You wouldn't, I don't think, drown or anything.
Yeah. But
probably be embarrassed if everybody was watching you.
Right.
Yeah, right.
With reporting from Desiree Hagen and Olivia Schmidt, in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumery.
Listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Tonight at 7 p.m. on the Perseverance Made stage, Perseverance Theater and Juno Ghostlight Theater present The Book of Will by Lauren Gunderson. It's a one-night-only staged reading, and it begins at 7 p.m., and it's free and open to the community. And joining me now to talk about it is Kate Ross from the Juno Ghostlight Theater, and Wesley Mann, who is director of this reading. Gunadchish, Haye Adi, thank you so much for both of you joining us. It's a pleasure to have you here. Wasi Iti, how's it going?
Delighted to be here.
Kate.
Blinking on ye.
There you go.
Yeah.
And Kate, welcome back. I feel like I just talked to you.
I don't know. We're like in a time warp, I think. Boston.
And Wes, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Juno audiences may not be familiar with you, but you are a professional actor by trade. You live down in Los Angeles, and you were in the world premiere of this play a few years back. And we'll talk about the play in just a few moments. But So tell us a little bit about why you're here.
Well, I'm here because my spouse is the artistic director of Perseverance Theater.
There you go. And Leslie Ishii.
Yeah.
Yes.
And she saw the world premiere of this play that I did back in 2016 at the Denver Center. And she's been in love with this play ever since. And she's been talking about wanting to get it up and out there, you know, for people to hear and see. And so that's part of that was sort of the genesis of this thing.
I love that. And so how did this collaboration between between Juno Ghostlight and Perseverance happen, Kate?
Yeah, I had been talking with Rio at Perseverance about just, you know, future schemes and plans and dreams and all those fun things. And one idea that was brought up was script reads and how much we both loved doing script reads. And we were like, well, why don't we throw something together of all the things you could produce? That's a low lift, right?
Yeah.
Relatively speaking. And so we started chatting a couple months ago at this point. And Rio mentioned that this was a project that Leslie and Wes had talked about wanting to do this script. And I said, great, let's do that one then. That sounds great. So okay. Let's do it.
Let's do it. And so it's happening. It's happening. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, Wes, tell us, what is the Book of Will?
Okay. Well, it's about the printing of the first folio of Shakespeare's work that was printed 3 or 4 years after his passing by his company of actors called the King's Men, and takes place in 1619 and ends in 1623. And so you would think that the show is about Shakespeare, but the play is called The Book of Will. And so I like to tell people that it is really about inner will, about how to pursue and achieve a goal together, you know, in the face of adversity, in the face of obstacles. And one of the strongest things in this play, as is common to Lauren Gunderson's work, is that it's filled with very strong women who support their men and get them to do what needs to be done.
I see. Okay. Yeah. And what is a folio?
A folio at this time in the 1600s was a very expensive book. It was made of one enormous sheet of paper that was folded in half. And it was made of high quality paper. And it was the initial printing of Shakespeare's plays as they gathered them. And that's a large part of the play, is how they gathered all these pieces together. So if you love Shakespeare, it's great, but it's also Shakespeare adjacent. If you don't know Shakespeare, you'll still really enjoy the play.
There's no talking in the fancy Shakespeare language necessarily. And it is interesting because, like, you learn a lot about how things were done back then in terms of the actors only had their particular sides. And so, like, once Shakespeare passed, they were like, well, wait a minute. Now, how do we make this happen? And because plays in those days were meant to be performed, not necessarily thought of as written down or as literature.
Correct.
And obviously we now know that Shakespeare is literature and has been around for, you know, hundreds of years. And that is a thing. So it's really interesting to see the inner workings of how that got put together by all of this group of people.
Right. And it was kind of folly at that time because half the country was illiterate.
Right.
So, you know, it was for a cross section of the population that was really interested in it.
Yeah. Because people would pay like not very much to go see a play, right? A penny, right, a play or something,
right,
to sit in the gallows and they would hear it and laugh and have fun at it. But it wasn't necessarily high art, as it were,
right,
thought of as we think of it today, really.
Yeah.
So I just want to get clarity too for tonight. This is tonight. July 17th. It's at 7 p.m. It is at Perseverance's main stage. It's a staged reading. What is a staged reading?
Well, the actors will be carrying their scripts, but they will be walking around and gesticulating in public.
Emoting.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. That sounds good.
We had our first rehearsal last night on our feet, and it really took a huge leap forward. I was very entertained, and I've been acquainted with this play for 8 years, and it was really lovely to see that happening.
That's fun. Yeah. Stage reading is, as Kate knows and wants to do more of, are they're put together quickly. There's not a lot of rehearsal necessarily, not initially memorizing of the lines. There's some familiarity, but it's really about hearing the words, hearing the scripts, and hearing the stories, really. I mean, it's really about that. And that's a passion of yours, Kate.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have so many incredibly talented actors and performers in town. And with that, because of the sheer number of theaters and projects and amazing things that are happening, people get very, very busy. And it can be really fun to do a short time commitment, fun, playful, energetic thing to get those creative juices flowing, have that cathartic outlet that we all need, especially in sometimes more than others. And so to be able to reach out to people that we all know in the community, for us doing the play, it's been incredible because the majority of us have worked together before, or we have seen each other on stage. And so to get to be in that room and be thrown together and say, all right, well, we're going to play. Like, let's go. Just, it doesn't matter because we don't have to memorize. We don't have to be thinking about the super technical aspects of, okay, I have to remember I have a costume change between scene 2 and 3. And all of that kind of goes out the window and lets you focus on the words, letting the words fly and finding those immediate connections between characters, between actors that I think can provide some of the most electrifying moments that you can see on stage at times.
Yeah. And I think you hit it there too. And just play, right? Mm-hmm. Just play. We haven't discovered everything about it yet. We're in those initial stages. And so we're sharing those explorations and discoveries with the audience. Okay. Now, speaking of all the people, who's in this thing?
Oh my gosh, I think you are.
What? I better get the script. No,
I seem to recall. Yeah.
I was there last night. I am in it.
You are in it. I am also in it.
Kate is also
in
it.
I am.
And who else do we have?
We are joined by Roblin Davis, Frank Henry Kosh Katas, Joshua Midget, Kelsey Riker, Jack Scholes, Aaron Tripp, Mariah Twitchell, and Ty Yamaoka. And we have stage directions read by Noah Carlson.
Yeah, it's really a lot of fun because some of these folks I've seen on stage, but mm-hmm. I haven't worked with before. Mm-hmm. I just worked with Kelsey for the first time in the War of the Worlds that we did last spring. But then some of the others, I don't think I've ever been in a play with Ty. I don't think I've ever been in work with some of the other folks in there. So it's been really fun. Wes, this is a play that is sort of focused, you know, like you said, it's not really about Shakespeare, it's Shakespeare adjacent, but you yourself have a great history with the Bard, yes?
I have, yes. I've done 17 of Shakespeare's plays thus far with multiples of Richard II, Midsummer, Twelfth Night, and Much Ado. And I've done some of the obscure ones like Cymbeline and Troilus and Cressida.
But have you done Pericles?
I was going to ask the same thing.
Yes, I have. So I know why it's made fun of.
You'll come to the play tonight and you'll find out all about that.
You will.
And so I want to talk a little bit more about you and your life down in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And tell us what that journey is like for you in terms of the kind of work you're doing down there and all those, you know, different things that you get into. This, you were in the original production of this play.
Yeah, this was at the Denver Center for Performing Arts. So I've never strayed far away from the theater because I just love it, you know, and especially Shakespeare. I worked with a company called the Hudson Valley Shakespeare Festival for 11 seasons out there, and that's where I did the majority of my Shakespeare. But I've also worked in film and television for 37 years now, and you know, my first gig was on Golden Girls in a scene with Betty White and Geraldine Fitzgerald.
Wow.
And it's sort of bookended now because I recently worked with Carol Burnett on Palm Royale, on Apple TV. So I don't know if that means my career is over because I could die a happy man.
Right.
But
right.
And I also teach and do speech and improv and all of those things that we piece together to make a life as an actor in Los Angeles.
Yeah. And how does that look for, you know, when we have young actors here in town who sometimes think, oh, maybe I want to move to the city and then, or they may move to the city, but then they come back or, you know, what is that? How hard is it?
Well, it's not easy, you know, first of all, you have to be good, and I feel like, see, I'm conservatory trained and I knew that I was going to be an actor when I was 13 years old.
Oh, wow.
So I got serious about I got conservatory training, you know, a 3-year conservatory program. And then, believe it or not, I was in a production of A Midsummer Night's Dream. And I was adorable. I was 24 years old. I played Puck. And that show moved to Los Angeles. And that's when I was seen by agents. And that transition itself was extremely fortunate because many actors move to Los Angeles and wait 2 years before they can even be seen by an agent.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, having the person who can help get you in the room is valuable.
It's essential.
Yeah. Do you think about that you mentioned, you know, you've been in the theater for 37 years or the career for 37 years or more. Mm-hmm. Do you think about retirement at all?
Well, you know, I'm going to be 62 in January. I don't go up and down stairs as well as I used to.
I feel you.
You know, those Shakespeare dances that they invariably put in at the end of the show, you know, something to consider. But, you know, I like voiceover work as well. So I've always said I don't think I'll actually retire until I'm horizontal or on the wrong side of the grass.
Yes. I joke that I'm retired, but I keep doing things. So I don't know what that means, but I keep saying it every time
something always comes up, doesn't it?
It's just the way it is. So this play, like you said, it premiered at the Denver Center a few years ago. And Lauren Gunderson, for those who may not be familiar with her work, it hasn't been done that often in Juneau, I don't think. But she is one of the most produced playwrights around the country these last few years. Like you mentioned, she writes very strong female characters. She writes strong characters in general, but her plays are produced quite heavily around in terms of regional theaters around the country. And so I'm just curious if you can tell us a little bit about what makes this particular play special and why is it good to be seeing it now?
Okay. What has reverberated for me over the last 3 days of rehearsal is that actors love this play because it is about them. And it is about the love that we have for the theater and achieving a goal together. We get to see each other succeed. We get to see each other struggle. And that creates an intimate relationship in a work environment that you don't find anywhere else. And there are certain lines of this play that just reverberate. One of my favorites is, "History walks here again." You get to say that one.
I do.
Yeah. And that just moves me. There's one character who is pondering why we do this. Why do we put our faith in fairies and stories? And he simply says, "Because I need it." And I think a lot of us share that point of view. And I think that's universal to an audience, too. Why do we do the things we do? Well, because we need them, you know.
Well said.
Thank you.
It's The Book of Will. It's by Lauren Gunderson. It's directed by Wesley Mann, who is visiting here in Juneau. And it stars a cast of all your local favorites. It's tonight at the Perseverance Main Stage. It's a cooperative adventure between Perseverance Theater and Juneau Ghostlight Theater. And you can find out more about Juneau Ghostlight and Perseverance on their socials or hit up their websites, which are JunoGhostlight.com and PTAlaska.org. Kate West, thanks so much for joining me today. It was a pleasure to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Sheesh.
Absolutely. That will do it for today's Juneau Afternoon. Have a wonderful Wednesday. On tomorrow's show, we'll learn about Green Crab Awareness Day this Friday, plus travel deals with Scott from Alaska Travel Gram, and a preview of the Climate Fair for a Cool Planet, and Cake's Dog Salmon Fest. Juneau Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTOO Juneau 104.3 and KAUK Juneau Auk Bay 91.7. Hello, out the road. Find the show online at kto.org/JuneauAfternoon, where you can listen to episodes, subscribe to the podcast, offer feedback or suggestions, or find out how to be a guest on the show. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Juneau Afternoon is a project of the KTOO Arts and Culture team. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Thanks, and have a glorious Juneau evening.